Everybody, the House State Affairs Committee will please come to order. Call the roll.
Representative Christ Tompkins. Representative Tallarico.
Here.
Representative Stoops.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Representative Vasquez.
Here.
Representative Gruenberg.
Here.
Chair Lynn.
Here. Good morning, everybody. Again, we have on the calendar this morning HB 106, there is a CS that needs to be adopted. I thought I was going to be later than I actually was to the committee meeting this morning because I took the opportunity of listening to Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's speech, and it was a stimulator. Very, very pleased.
You have to learn Hebrew.
I do have to learn Hebrew because he said was a message that should be inserted in every language.
I don't know it either, so don't feel bad.
You've been to Israel, have you not?
Yes.
And I have too. Okay. With that little interlude, we are here in 106. Mr. Vice Chair, I believe we have a CS for adoption. Would you make a motion?
Mr. Chair, I would move that we put the CS for House Bill 106, that's version GH1897W, as the working copy for discussion on the committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gruenberg.
Is it the Chair's wish to have an objection for discussion only, or do you want us to adopt it first? I don't know.
Well, why don't we... what's the wish of the committee on it?
You've informed me that you're leaving and you're going to throw the gavel my way, so I would just say no, don't object. This is the... unless you have a reason you don't want us to know about this new CS, then that would be the
okay,
issue.
Okay, well, without objection, we will adopt the CS, and I have a bill up in the other body just right after 9 o'clock, so I'll have to give the gavel to my worthy vice chair here. So, with that, who is going to present this bill, the CS? My goodness, that's a lot of paperwork over there.
It is. For the record, my name is Carol Beecher, Director of the Child Support Services Division. I'm here to speak to you this morning about House Bill 106. In a previous hearing, there were many...
Can you move the mic a little closer? Or you turn it up or something? Or both?
Okay, I'll talk louder. In a previous bill, there were many questions that were raised, and the committee had requested a letter and the supporting documentation for those questions. We did provide those answers and the documentation, and after the brief summary that I'll give, if you have questions to that, we are happy to provide some help in walking through those documents. They are federal documents, and sometimes it's very difficult to find the exact point that we are referring to. HB 106 will amend our current law by expanding it to provide an efficient and effective mechanism for enforcing child support orders between countries. The current version of the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act, or UIFSA, is already contained in Alaska Statutes 25.25.100 through 800. A brief background will help to provide some context to this bill. Alaska's child support program began in 1976. It is authorized under Title 4D of the Social Security Act. The program is federally matched, 66% federal, 34% state. In FY15, the federal match was $19 million. In 2014, the Child Support Services Division collected approximately $112 million, of which 90% goes directly to families, so approximately $100 million to families. The other 10% goes to reimburse the federal and state government for foster care and other forms of public assistance. Alaska passed the original version of UIFSA into law in 1996. UIFSA was written by the Uniform Law Commissioners to provide a clear framework and a mechanism for enforcing orders between states. This was necessary to ensure that one order was controlling, and it cleared up problems with the multiple jurisdictional issues and orders where sometimes families would have multiple orders depending on what state they lived in. The Act has been instrumental in providing a uniform method for enforcing child support orders. The theme of UWISA is essentially one order at one time in one place. UWISA was amended in 2001 and again in 2008. Alaska's Uniform Law Commissioner at that time, Deborah Baer, attended the 2008 convention and took part in the amendment process. The main change of the 2008 amendments is the addition of a new section which deals with the child support enforcement between the countries who have signed the convention. Other changes largely consist of cleanup language and added definitions and clarifications. The amended version, which is known as UWISA 2008, will greatly improve child support services when one parent lives outside of the United States. When Alaska passed the law in 1996, all other U.S. jurisdictions passed the law by 1998. In 2007, the United States signed the Hague Convention on the International Recovery of Child Support and Other Forms of Family Maintenance. This treaty is known as the Convention. In 2008, the Uniform Law Commission amended UWISA to incorporate changes mandated by the Convention. This version is known again as UWISA 2008. In 2010, the Senate provided a resolution of advice and consent to ratification. In September of 2014, Public Law 113-183, Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, was signed into law. This law requires that all 4D child support programs pass UWISA 2008 by the next legislative session, which for Alaska is by July 1, 2015. Federal funding of the 4D child support program is a condition of passage, which means $19 million to CSSD. Further, the language of UWISA 2008 is not allowed to be amended in order to ensure the uniformity in language and forms, and we are continuing to work closely with the Federal Office of Child Support Enforcement to ensure the bill wording is in compliance, hence the amended version that you have before you today. Once passed, the new section of the bill, Article 7, will not go into effect until all U.S. jurisdictions have passed UWISA 2008 and the final steps of the ratification process are completed. To date, 12 states have enacted UWISA 2008 and 23 states have legislation pending. The other states are in the drafting stage. So why should Alaska pass this law? Well, regardless of the federal funding provisions, there are several reasons. It is a very good bill. UWISA 2008 will allow U.S. children to receive support when the other party resides in a treaty country. Currently, the United States programs do process child support orders from foreign countries, but it's a one-way street. We have no mechanism in place to ensure that the foreign countries enforce our orders. Many will not process a foreign order in the absence of a treaty obligation. 2008 changes were limited to those necessary to accommodate the convention, and passage will ensure a uniform method of enforcing child support orders between countries. If you have any questions, please ask, and we are also willing to speak to the letter that we provided. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. Kind of a complicated bill here, really. There's so much involved. We have, you know, the bill itself here in Alaska, and kind of plus overseas, and they all have different ideas over there. Concerned, but well, let me go to this. And I asked it the last time, I'm going to ask it again. What changes, if any, could we make in the Alaska legislature to this bill without endangering the overall treaty between us and all the other countries involved? Can we change anything? Is it substance or what? What's possible for change?
Mr. Chair, I will ask Stacy Steinberg to refer to the changes to the bill.
And I know I asked a similar question at the last hearing, but I'd like to hear it again.
Certainly, Chair Lynn. Stacy Steinberg, I'm the Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Attorney General's Office, supervising the Collections and Support Section. This is a uniform act, so there may be some small tweaks here and there, but basically the substance needs to remain the same because it's vital that all the states have the same uniform act and have that same language because it is critical before the U.S. can do the final steps for ratification that the president can say that all the states have the implementing language in place in their state. And UFSA 2008, that's the vehicle to make sure every single state has the correct language and the correct substantive law in their state to be able to enforce these orders in accordance with the convention terms.
And what happens if one of these non-American parties to the treaty fails to live up to the treaty? Is there any consequence?
Chair Lynn, they do have provisions under the convention that they need to honor the terms of that convention, and I'd have to do some further research to find out what the consequences would be if a convention country is not going to live up to its promises to do what it promises to do in the convention, which is in essence enforce orders from other convention countries.
Okay. I'm strongly in support of proper, adequate child support. Very, very critical. I'm also concerned about, potential problems with American sovereignty and, of course, sovereignty of Alaska itself. Am I wrong? Should I be concerned?
Chair Lynn, from my perspective of reviewing the bill, certainly the Attorney General's office doesn't have those same concerns. We've reviewed it. We currently already have certain provisions in this right. Article 6 for enforcing foreign orders. This makes it just a slightly different for convention orders, but we don't see any effect on the actual sovereignty of the state of Alaska affected by this bill.
So this new version would not change what already is significantly, right?
That would be correct.
Okay. Reverend Keller.
Yeah, just to follow up on that one first, then I want to back up. Are you saying on the record then that there are no standards being changed in this bill that currently apply? Let's stick with interstate orders now, but it seemed to me as I read it that I saw a couple places where the standards were changed for how we would apply interstate orders. And are you saying it has no effect on that whatsoever?
Through the chair, before I make that affirmative statement, without any reservations, in general, I don't see those changes, but I will go back and do a comparison on what the process is if it's a non-convention country, because there are just a few slight differences, and I can do a comparison of if we have a non-convention country and then under Article 6 compared to a convention country under Article 7. There are going to be some slight difference. I mean, the one I know off the top of my head is just the time period for a person to respond. There is a provision in Article 7 that says, if you're living in a foreign country, you have up to 60 days to respond when the order is being registered here in Alaska. And under the 600s, I believe, I can't remember if it's 20 or 30 days. So, I mean, that's one difference, but I'd have to actually go through, each provision and do a comparison on that.
Mr. Chair.
Follow up, please.
Okay, yeah, no, I really appreciate that. We just got the bill, before us, the CS, and there's 40-some pages, and frankly, it's going to take some time, so I'm hoping that we can convince the chair to hold the bill over for a little while, and your evaluation of that is one that I hope that we're all doing too, looking at it to see if it does affect. If I could, a couple more questions.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I want to back way up. You said that the 10% of the revenue collected in CSED comes back to the state in the form of for foster care and what else? There was two things.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, it comes back through CSSD, not only for state but also federal foster care and TANF, or temporary aid for needy families, to reimburse the Health and Social Services Department.
To reimburse them?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, that, I just got to process that. I had, wasn't aware of that money stream and just trying to think of the implications of it, and I appreciate that.
Through the chair, if I could just follow up on that, because this area can get a little bit complicated, is that what happens is that if the child goes into foster care, then the child support actually belongs to the state. So that's why the money's coming back from the state, is because the child was in foster care.
I see.
Parent who's supposed to pay child support, well, then that child support then comes back to the state because the child was in the state's custody. And similar to also for public assistance benefits, if you have a custodial parent and they start receiving public assistance, they assign their right to their child support to the state because the state's paying that parent. And so that's another form of the reimbursement that, 10% falls within.
Another one?
Yes, please. We have plenty of time here.
Okay, good. There's actually a couple connected ones, and one of them I think I know the answer to, and that I think what you said, I would ask that this only happens if another foreign country has adopted exactly the same statute as we are passing here, and I think you would say no. You know, you can say that isn't the standard. And I think in that same context, I think I heard you say that we already enforce orders that come from foreign countries. Even though we have no control legislatively or, you know, even in the courts or anything as far as what the standard may be by which that order came down. So I would assume that you somehow apply the same standards to these foreign orders, you know, and I think what you're saying, the other flip side of this is that the reason for the bill is that we can get our orders enforced in their country. So that where the rubber hits the road for that for me is that that means that we would have access, like, to the foreign bank account or whatever to collect, you know, if there was a court order, you know, to access to get the money that otherwise we couldn't touch. But I still am troubled by the our enforcement of the foreign orders, even though this bill doesn't directly address that. Just trying to figure out how that works, you know.
Through the chair, Representative Keller, essentially what happens is we have a order in another state, we ask that state to enforce the order. So it wouldn't be a situation where we were reaching in, Alaska reaching into another country's bank account to pull the money out. That country would take care of the enforcement processes as the central authority and then send the money to CSSD to process through our disbursement unit.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. How about the other half? How, if we have a foreign order that we're complying to, how do we do anything to verify that it's a valid order and by what standards?
Yeah, we can do that.
Through the chair, Stacey's
time. And if I may, you ladies both have a very similar sounding voice, so it's difficult over here to tell which one's speaking. So when you change from one person to the other, would you please identify yourself to help out these poor folks over here?
Yes.
So when you change voices here, change people, please at least say your name or something so they know.
Through the chair, Stacey Steinberg. Now you made me forget the question. Through the chair, as far as foreign orders, what our current process is and our current existing law, the way we define a state can include a state, you know, within the United States, or it can include a foreign country that has similar standards to our standards. And that's a little vague, but it's basically says, you know, you have to have similar standards to what we have. So if we get an order from a foreign country, for example, Czechoslovakia, you know, we look at the order to see, okay, did that parent get, was provided due process? Did they get notice and opportunity to be heard? And then we look at the actual content of the order. I mean, you know, does it have something crazy in it, or is it similar to our orders where it says you have to pay a certain amount of money? And so we look at that, and then we then take that to the court to register it. So we already have a process, although it'll be much easier under Article 7 if a country is a convention country, because then we're already assured that that convention country has those processes because they have to have it in order to sign on and ratify the convention. So it actually makes it easier, as opposed to now, it's like, well, we have a provision in our statute to enforce an order from a foreign country, but we have to look at, well, do they have similar standards to our country? And we have to just look at the order to see if it meets that criteria. And then as part of it, we do take that order and register it with our superior court. And as part of that process, under either Article 6 or Article 7, the parent is notified and they get a copy of it and they have an opportunity to object. For example, they might say, well, that's not the right order, like there was a subsequent order, or, you know, I appealed it and it was reversed on appeal. Or they may say, I don't know what you're talking about, I've never seen it, basically saying they didn't get provided due process.
One last, just to confirm that I understood the answer. So you're saying that it's up to CSED, and the process is in place in CSED to determine whether or not there are similar standards, and then that's it. So there's no checks and balances on that. That is the criteria, and I know you do it in good faith. You know, I'm not accusing or anything. I'm just saying that is the way it is determined, is that we have attorneys in the CSED that look at this all the time, and they make the decision of whether or not the foreign order is legit. And like you say, with the checks and balances of getting the people involved the chance to respond to it after it's in our superior court, which is a significant thing because it's on the record, you know. And so I just try to understand.
Yeah, through the chair, Representative Keller. That is correct. And it's not just CSSD, but then we take that order to the court. So there's also part of the court process, and the court's going to look at that also. So it's kind of CSSD and the court process. And again, the parent has the right to contest it. That's the terminology used, to contest it. So CSSD, the court, and the parents are involved in that process.
At the point in passing, how many foreign countries are we talking about here? And where are they, primarily European countries that include Asian countries, Middle East countries?
Chairman Lin, currently there are 33 countries that have signed on, and 28 of those are the European Union. So it includes a few other countries such as Bosnia, Burkina Faso, and some. Also, which is an African country, I believe it's Bosnia, and
any Asian countries?
No, Chairman, there are no Asian countries who have signed on yet, and nor have any of the South American countries yet signed on. They were part of the discussion in the treaty, but they do not have the internal structure yet to be able to have the structure required for the convention.
Are there any Middle Eastern countries?
No, sir.
Okay. No. Anybody else? Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. it looks to me like when, and I'm looking at a document that's a letter of February 25 from Kate Glover, alleged counsel, one-page letter. And a couple things from that letter. It reflects in the second paragraph, the second sentence, under the Federal Act, the states are required to adopt verbatim the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act of 2008. Now, we talked, the three of us, yesterday, in my office. And I think you have the text of that somewhere in the report here. I'm talking about that particular section 301. What page is that found in this report?
Through the chair, this is Stacy Steinberg. Give me a moment.
At this point, I'm going to turn the gavel over to Vice Chair Keller.
Okay, we're back on. I just wanted to tell you, Representative Grunberg, that I believe Kate is online. I don't have the documentation here, but
I didn't see that in the note. I saw that there was somebody from the Uniform Commissioners and a deputy in the Department of Hess. I didn't see if Kato, no.
Okay. Yeah.
But anyway, Mr. Chair, through the chair, Ms. Steinberg, where is Section 301?
Through the chair, that would be in the Senate report. That's on page 7.
Okay. When we talked yesterday, we focused, the three of us, on that word. Where is that on page 7 here?
On page, through the chair, this is Stacy Steinberg. It's on page 7, and if you're looking at your exhibit, if you look at the top page, it's actually on the very top page. It's page 44. And what it says is,
excuse me.
Wait a minute.
Are
you
asking
me?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Which document, for the record, which document are we referring to?
Oh, here. Come through the chair with your comments. And what it is Representative Grunberg introduced a memo that we had gotten in the past, and we hadn't had a chance to find it, and it looks like we don't have it in our packet. So
we don't need to get this out.
This is a letter dated, you said, February what?
Let's get the market. Mark can distribute this. I thought this had been given out.
And just for the record, what we're going to do, of course, is get these questions online. We've got plenty of time, you know. And I really appreciate the fact that we're moving slow, and this, you know, we are recovering from not having all of our paperwork in a neat stack before we got here. So if you would proceed, if you like, without the document, yeah.
Mark's going to do it now. Just through the chair, Mr. Chair. All of my questions, hopefully, are through the chair.
Yeah.
Correct.
Well, yeah. Okay.
What, Stacy? Are we looking at this document here? Does everybody? Is this what you're talking about? We should talk about here.
Through the chair, that is the document, and I'll just, for the record, just list the title of the document. The title of the document is the Supporting At-Risk Kids Act, and what it is, it's the. It's from the U.S. Committee on Finance report, and this is for, at that time, Senate Bill 1870, and that's out of the 113th Congress, and it's report 113-137. This is an exhibit that was attached to a letter that Ms. Beecher and myself had prepared for the committee in response to some of the questions that we received at the last committee hearing.
We're calling that easy if we could, just to make sure exactly where we're at, and you know, if you would follow what I'm saying here, so I got it right. In our packets, we did have Exhibit 2, which is the U.S. Senate Report 113-137, and the calendar number 279. And on the seventh page of Exhibit 2, which is labeled on the top as page 44, which led to the confusion here, in the middle of the page is the a comment, a narrative on the committee bill. So that I think that puts us in the context of our comments. But I don't remember if Stacy was responding or you were asking questions.
Let me start again.
Representative Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And by the way, I see we're giving out the
thank you.
The report, the letter.
Mr. Chair, for the record.
Representative Rasquez.
Yeah, I just received the legal services memo from Kate Glover, dated February 25th. This morning, as I came into the room, we had another memo dated March 2nd from the same individual, Kate Glover, Legislative Counsel, on the substitute bill, which was also provided this morning.
And Representative Grunberg, I believe your question was based on the memo dated February 25th.
And
right?
I guess we should have a second and letter from Kate.
Right.
And
yes.
We just got that in front of us right now. And I did talk to Kate Glover before the meeting today, and she's available if we need to call her to get something straightened out. So if you would again, Representative Grunberg, restate your question based on the February 25th memo.
Let me start again. Okay. If the members would look on page 44, in the middle paragraph, says committee bill, the final sentence reads, quote, states would be required to adopt the 2008 amendments verbatim to ensure uniformity of procedures, requirements, and reporting forms. I'm going to ask you a leading question here. As I understand it, this report was basically written by Senate staff, signed off by senators, and this quotes, or it paraphrases, a statute, a word in a statute, a federal statute. But this is not the quote from the statute itself. It's a quote from the report. Can you show us in this document where the word verbatim appears in the law itself?
Through the Vice Chair Keller. This is Stacey Steinberg. So this paragraph you just read is for Senate Bill, I believe it was 1870. It ended up a different version of the bill was passed, but it's the same exact language from that bill. And the language in the bill basically is, it's actually extremely simple. It basically just says that the states, what they did is they took the current law, which is 42, USC 666 paragraph F, as in Frank, and in the current law, or I should say before this bill was signed, it says that all states must basically adopt the 1996 version of UFSA. What Congress passed in September basically takes that language and just literally just says, changed it to say that the states must adopt UFSA 2008. So it basically just plops up. And the language of the bill doesn't say the states must adopt verbatim. It just says that they must adopt UFSA 2008. And I can cite the exact language.
And just for clarification, and this is in reference to the Senate bill and the House bill that passed. There is no such report.
Correct. The actual Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, the bill that actually passed the Congress, it was different than this bill that the report was on, but it has the same language. There are about six different bills that this language was in, and ultimately the one that was passed, I couldn't find any committee reports for that, but I do know that it was passed by quickly. In June, it was passed by House, a voice vote by the House, and then in August, the Senate unanimously passed it.
So before we go back to your follow-up, and maybe this is where you're going, is does verbatim apply to the new language in the House bill? Or would you, if we got the same staffer to write the same memo, would they have changed it?
Vice Chair, yes, it would apply because it's the same exact language.
Okay. As I understand it, what you have given us here is a word from a Senate report in a bill that did not pass, and the bill that did pass does not contain the word verbatim. Today, your testimony, first you said a few minutes ago, and I don't mean to be critical here, I'm just trying to quote here, and I appreciate your good lawyer, and we respect that, mean that, that what you said earlier, when you test, let me look at my notes, I'm sorry here. You said basically something like that there could be minor changes or something. I don't remember the exact, here it is. The states can do minor changes. That's what you said first. And then what you said today is the states have basically adopted the states must basically adopt UFSA. And when the three of us talked in my office, we focused on the word verbatim, and I wanted to know what you meant by the word verbatim. And I didn't get an answer that really clarified that. And now it appears that the word verbatim is not in the current federal law. And I, frankly, since this is devolving down on what the federal law requires, and I don't mean to put you folks on the spot, I'm going to ask the chair if maybe we can get somebody from the federal government or somebody to, what is the exact language in the law that was signed by the president on this point? Do you have that, the exact language of the federal law itself and/or any regulations that have the force of law, not just a Senate report from a bill that didn't pass.
Stacy, would you like to?
Yeah, through the Vice Chair, Stacy Steinberg. The actual law that was passed says, by striking, quote, adopted as of such date, close quote, and inserted, quote, adopted as of September 30, 2008.
To the Chair, I realize that what this did, the way the federal government drafts their bills are a lot different than us. They don't set out the whole thing in bold and brackets and underline. What they do is they just change the word, and then you have to go back to the, in this case, the earlier bill, because they just extended an earlier bill. So, once again, I don't care whether it was in an earlier bill that was extended or how it was. I want to know what the operative federal law and regulation language states, please.
Stacy, would you like to respond?
Through the Vice Chair, the operative language in the law is that we have to adopt U.S., quote, adopted as of September 30 of 2008. That's what the law requires the states to do.
May I continue?
No, okay. Yeah, again, I'm making sure you go through the chair. Dialogue's fine, but we don't want to be in a position where another committee member that wants to get in on the dialogue, and we also want to consider that. But yes, follow up, Representative.
I appreciate it. Sometimes I go ahead of myself. Through the chair. I understand that what this new law did was it extended an earlier law. And so we have to go back to the language of the earlier law, because that's now the law that's been extended. And I want to see whether the word verbatim appears there, or if it simply says we have to adopt UIFSA. Because, as I think we all know in this committee, we can adopt a uniform act and it can contain some changes. It does not have to be verbatim.
Through the Vice Chair, what the law requires us under 42 U.S.C. 666 subsection F, it requires us to adopt the 2008 version of UIFSA in order to qualify for continued federal funding. It requires us to adopt UIFSA 2008, not a variation of 2008. I believe the difference is that I'm not aware of any uniform law that is specifically tied to continued federal funding. And so I'd say that that would be the difference between our other types of uniform laws that may be changed. In this case, this is tied specifically to our funding, and Congress has said adopt UIFSA 2008 version, not a substantially similar version to 2008.
I see. That helps. Representative Greenberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm now getting a little more confused than I was. It sounds like, through the chair, it sounds like what the bill we're considering today, whatever that House bill number is,
106.
Is to adopt not the 2008 UIFSA, but an updated version of the 2008 UIFSA. And it sounds further like the federal law, the current federal law, requires us to adopt the 2008 UIFSA, not the updated version. Through the chair, is that right, or am I totally confused?
Stacy?
Through the vice chair, that's not correct. We're supposed to adopt UIFSA 2008, and that is the current version of UIFSA as by the Uniform Law Commissioners. You do have a committee substitute in front of you, partly because when the bill was drafted, there were some oversights in the drafting language to make sure the committee substitute makes sure that this bill does match up with UIFSA 2008. For example, we did work with the Federal Office of Child Support, and they pointed out to us there were a couple little areas where our language wasn't correct. And I think the other thing that may be adding some confusion is when I said minor changes, there are certain areas, for example, not every state calls their child support agency the Child Support Services Division. So in another state, they may call it the Child Support Enforcement Agency. I mean, they may have another name for their agency. So, I mean, those changes are permitted because obviously you need to name the appropriate entity for your state, and that's not going to be the same in every single state. So when I talk to minor changes, I mean, those types of changes, you know, are permitted. Mm. But in essence, the federal law that our federal funding is tied to, Congress said, states, you need to update your version of UIFSA and adopt the 2008 version. And again, we've worked with the Federal Office of Child Support to make sure the language is correct. And then some of the things that came up in this committee substitute are drafting style changes, because the drafting style for Alaska is different from the Uniform Law Commission. So there are some stylistic differences that I don't think are substantive changes.
Okay. What we'll do with this, thank you, Stacy, and Representative Grunberg, that line of questioning has really helped clarify it for me, and I really appreciate it. And we'll work on this, okay, because I want to save a little bit of time to see if there's any other concerns with the bill. Sure. You know, it's on the table. It's on the table clean and fair, so thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Grunberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. UIFSA was adopted in 2008. By the Uniform Commissioners. At the time, was it, the federal law was adopted like last year in 2014, 6 years later, is that right?
Correct.
At the time, and the federal law requires that the states adopt UIFSA in the very next legislative session. Is that right?
Correct.
At the time UIFSA was adopted in 2008, was it known that the states were going to have to adopt UIFSA to continue to get federal money?
Through the Vice Chair, I do know that the Uniform Law Commissioners met in 2008 specifically to amend the Uniform Law to provide for the Hague Convention provisions. Because the president at that point had already signed the convention, but there needed to be the implementing language through the states, through UIFSA, to actually have everything in place in the United States so that we could actually ratify the convention.
Thank you, through the chair.
Representative Grunberg.
So at the time the commissioners adopted UIFSA, it was known that the states were going to have to do it so that the United States could comply with the convention. It was going to be something that was going to have to be implemented at the state level, right?
Through the Vice Chair, that is my understanding, and I did provide an exhibit in one of the packets. I'd have to look to see what exhibit number, that had the commentary to UIFSA, where the commissioners provided some commentary to Article 7 to explain why they were adding Article 7 and the reasoning behind it. And they do discuss the treaty and the necessary steps for the states to change their state law.
Through the chair, the reason I'm asking these questions, because this bill goes to judiciary, but in this committee, we're the State Affairs Committee, and our focus is a little different. Our focus is the implementation, in this case, of a treaty implemented by a federal law. And I am quite concerned, just speaking as myself, that 6 years ago, they adopted a Uniform Act, and they knew that the states were going to have to adopt it to comply with the treaty. And this legislature was not informed until the very last year, giving us only 1 year to do this whole thing. And I don't know how we're going to handle this, the chair is not here, but I am really concerned that the state government, Ms. Bear, who was an assistant attorney general or whoever, and she's very involved, and we have a bunch of other people who are commissioners, nobody let us know that we were going to have to adopt this Uniform Act until it came down to us at the last minute. Mm-hmm. And we have one session, and I don't know if there's going to be a fiscal note with this or not, but it's going to have to go between four and six committees in 90 days. when we would have had 6 years to do it. And that's, I think, at the core of this committee's jurisdiction. I'm very jealous of that, folks, and that's why I'm bringing it up. I'm not raining on you or anything, but we've got to do this thing better, and I want to know, because the Department of Law should be involved one way or the other. I want to know what other uniform acts and treaty implementing legislation's coming down so this legislature can do its job and not rush through this. Very complex. We need to have our time to do it right. Thank you for letting me say that.
And Mr. Chair, to that point, it is really outrageous that only this morning we got a 40-page CS committee substitute bill. Only this morning we got a 4-page legal memo dated March 2nd from Kate Glover, legislative counsel, to the committee on the committee substitute. Only last night after 5 o'clock, we received 6 pages without, and I'm not counting the cover sheet, that consists of 6 exhibits. These are real complex issues. I cannot fathom why people are trying to rush and trying to expect us, what did mean after 5? Actually, it was probably after 6 p.m. that we got all these documents. I mean, I can only agree with my colleague, Representative Bloomberg. But again, Mr. Chair?
If I could qualify that a little bit, Representative Vasquez. We had some of those documents provided, you know, with the last hearing and that. But I really identify with your remarks, and we're not, you know, and it's a, and just, I'm not trying to defend anybody because I'm not even sure who's to blame. but the point is that there is no intention of moving this bill. This is part of the process. So I want, from my perspective, you know, I want the division, the department to come up with documents, even if they are at the last minute, but we will reserve the right to say, hold off. Okay. You know, we're going slow on this one, and that's what we're doing.
So. Mr. Chair, but I'm going to proceed to some other issues. Okay. At the last meeting, we discussed having someone from the State Department testify. Do we have anybody from the State Department available?
Through the chair, Representative Vasquez, we do not.
Okay. We also discussed the Alaska Congressional Delegation. This involves a treaty, which is within the jurisdiction of the United States Senate. Do we have anyone from Senator Murkowski or Senator Sullivan's office available for testimony?
Through the Vice Chair, this is Stacey Steinberg. We do not, but when we went back to look at our the process is that the Senate has already provided its advice and consent on the treaty.
That still doesn't answer the question of whether we have someone from one of the senator's office here to testify to that effect. I'm getting this from secondhand. Mr. Chair, we need someone from the actual senator's office testifying as to that issue and testifying with regard to this bill and what impact it has, if any, on the treaty.
Stacey, would you like to respond?
Through the Vice Chair, we don't have anyone here to testify on that, and I'm not sure if they'd be available.
And we can, Representative Vasquez, we can talk to the chair and ask him to make that invitation per your request, which I think is a reasonable one. Did you have a follow-up then?
Well, it goes on to another issue. I think the question that my colleague is trying to, the question he has not been answered. I would also like to see the federal statute, the federal law that requires a, quote, pervading adoption of this treaty. I mean, I'd like to see the statute. I'd like to see the statute. I haven't seen anything here.
Through the Vice Chair, the law was provided in the packet of exhibits, and the exhibits include, I believe it's 6 and 7, and basically exhibit 6 is the congressional act that changed the federal statute to require states to adopt UFC 2008, and exhibit 7 is 42 USC 666 paragraph F.
So, excuse me.
That's all right. Just to clarify for the record, then in our packets in Exhibit 6, we have Public Law 113-183. And in Exhibit 7, we also have, which is the U.S. Code 666. Did you have a follow-up, Representative Vasquez?
Was that Exhibit 7?
Maybe can I get in here?
Representative Grunberg?
Okay. Ms. Steinberg, I have in front of me Exhibit 7, and we also have Exhibit 6. Please cite us to the page and paragraph that requires the adoption of UFSA.
Yes, through the Vice Chair, Stacey Steinberg. Exhibit 6, and that's going to be on page 4. And on page 4, towards the bottom of the page.
Is this public, to the Chair, is this Public Law 113-183? Is that? That looks like Exhibit 6. And my pages are not. 1, 2,
Mr. Chair. Three.
Representative Vasquez?
This exhibit, in looking at it, does not have the pages numbered. I'm looking here. Exhibit 6, Public Law 113-183 excerpt. But the pages are not numbered. So
right.
You'll have to make reference to the page in some other manner.
Stacey?
So if you look at the top of the page, it is four pages in if you flip, but the top of the page starts with treaty country and if the individual resides in a foreign country.
We have it.
Yeah.
And then the actual citation, you'll move to the bottom third of the page. In the bottom third of the page, there's a heading under F that says State Law Requirement Concerning the Uniform Interstate Family Support Act.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look there, and then there'll be one, there's A, B, and then C has the strikes adopted as of such date, and inserts, quote, adopted as of September 30, 2008. It's a little confusing because, Representative Grunberg had mentioned that this drafting style for the U.S. Congress is different than ours, so you have to take this part, and then you have to flip over to the actual law, which is in Exhibit 7.
Okay. Through the chair. Could you?
No, let me finish.
And moving to Exhibit 7, and at the top of the page it's listed, that's 42 U.S.C. 666. Mm-hmm. And hopefully your pages at the very top, there is numbering of the pages. And if you turn to page 11,
okay, I'm there, I believe. Everybody find page 11?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Go ahead.
And then on page 11, about a quarter of the way down the page, is subsection F that says, F as in Frank, Uniform Interstate Family Support Act. And this basically says, in order to satisfy section 65420 capital A, which is the federal funding statutes for CSSD, the states must adopt the Uniform Interstate Support Act. And Public Law 113-137 struck the language in here to make it say as of 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll look down, if you continue to look down, skip the next paragraph. It says amendment of subsection F, and it specifically has there the Public Law 113. It cites it and gives the specific language that amends that subsection F.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair.
Representative Grunberg.
Okay. So now we are at the heart of the matter. it seems. And what we're looking at is this, Exhibit 7, which is the underlying legislation here. And that's 42 U.S.C. 666. That's what we're really looking at, this language on page 11. Now, it says here, through the chair, it says that as on or after January 1st of 98, each state must have, in effect, UIFSA. And, of course, Alaska had UIFSA and complied with this. And now, because UIFSA was amended, then this federal law had to be amended too, so it referenced the 2008 version, which includes Article 7, the Hague Convention implementing legislation. As I mentioned a few minutes ago, normally you can adopt a Uniform Act and have a number of variations to it, so long as it doesn't destroy what the technical term is, uniformity. The acts must be sufficiently uniform that the commission's says this act may be cited as the Uniform Enforcement of Foreign Support Act, and it must be interpreted by the states in a uniform manner. That means they give it their blessing, and it's uniform. And the key thing is that the commissioners decide whether it's uniform. And it may be that they'll say, yeah, the changes you made are minor, and we'll still allow you to call it uniform. In other cases, like in, I believe, the Uniform Probate Code in Alaska, is sufficiently different that it doesn't qualify as uniform. Uniform Commercial Code is uniform, et cetera, et cetera. But I think we have some that are not. But the key thing, Mr. Chair, is that the commissioners decide whether it's uniform. And we have a commission, somebody from the staff of the commission on the line, somebody from Chicago, who can testify this morning, as I understand it. My question to you, and maybe to the folks from the commission, is in this case, since it involves the federal government, the State Department, and a treaty, is it still up to the commissioners to decide whether it's uniform, or does some federal official decide whether it meets the requirement of this federal law? Question is, who decides in this case? You, Chair.
Stacy, did you want to respond?
Through the Vice Chair, we do have a Uniform Law Commissioner that is online that's addressing UIFSA 2008. We do have her online. And I will say that we do work with the Federal Office of Child Support to ensure that the language of our bill does match, because from CSSD's perspective, it's partly a funding issue, so we want to ensure that the Federal Office of Child Support agrees that our law is correct and that it meets the requirements of our state plan to continue our federal funding.
I would like to ask that if you concur with what I believe has been asked, and the part of the reason I'm doing this is to get confirmation from Representative Vasquez and Representative Grunberg, that it would probably be more valuable to hear from the Uniform Law Commission when we have somebody online from the federal government, you know, that can speak to this, and perhaps our somebody from the various delegation offices that we have. So, Representative Grunberg.
The reason I'm asking this, folks, is because, as I understand it, somewhere else in federal law, it says that either the Hague Convention or this 42 U.S.C. 666 doesn't apply. I guess it must be the 2008 amendments in Exhibit 6 here, doesn't apply until every single state has adopted UIFSA in some, and the question is in what form. But if in fact it was the federal government's intent that it would apply immediately, then why leave it up to the individual states to allow any of the 50 states to basically veto this? You know, if it was going to be a federal mandate, then they would say it applies now. But here they said, apparently, that state of Alaska, Nebraska, or any place in between can veto it by just not, enacting it. And I need to have some answers on that because it's not clear.
Thank you, Representative Greenberg. So that would be probably an appropriate question to ask the federal CSED organization that you deal with, you're dealing with. So
the Vice Chair, Keller, probably the Uniform Law Commissioner and potentially a person from the Federal Office of Health Support.
Yes. Yeah, and what I'm suggesting is that we do both, and not waste our time now. So.
Yeah, it's one thing. This is a, like a skein or an onion a little bit, because I could see
kind of like over
the Department of Child Support, HESR, Social Security, whoever it is, taking one position, and that may not have been the position that the actual folks in the Department of State who negotiated this treaty took. We could have, as happens sometimes, two different federal agencies, each trying to exert their different interpretation. And so, Mr. Chair, respectfully, I want to be sure that we know what's going on. I don't know if any other state has gotten to this level, but it sure affects us all, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. So we got the question, I think, solidly on the table. is there anything else that we want to call to attention that we want to come back and visit next time? Representative Grunberg, is something different?
Yeah, since we have somebody now from the commissioners, do you want to delay them or do you want to have their testify?
Yeah, like I said, Representative Grunberg, we want to delay it until we get somebody here from the federal CSED. And then that way we'll have, with two different perspectives online, we'll not waste time.
With the commissioners, so, too.
That's right.
Thanks. Yeah. I'm sorry we didn't get this far yesterday. I apologize.
Any other questions that we want to put on the table? Thank you. We don't injure the messengers, but sometimes we make it pretty uncomfortable. And sometimes it's unintentional. Sometimes it is. I think in this case it's unintentional. Representative Grunberg.
Yeah, and at some point we're going to have to get into the meat of this thing. What this really does, it may simply be an enforcement mechanism, and you may just be in the unfortunate position of having to have us go down this trail here. But I don't want to have us lose sight of the doing.
Yeah, Representative Grunberg, I appreciate your questions, and I appreciate your evaluation of why we should deal with it in state affairs. I think that's true, and thank you. And so we're going to set the bill aside, and we're adjourned at 15 minutes after 9.
Nice job.